What's up, buddy?
What's going on?
How you doing,
man? Long time no chat.
Yeah, no listen. Long time no listen.
It's been a hot minute, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's been a while. But for everybody out there, welcome back to Charlie Foxtrot Radio. Got Pete Franklin back on. And, I mean, let's be real. It's been a minute. I've had quite a few episodes. We've been trying to get back together and get some stuff back out here on the, the podcasting world for folks to listen to. But I tell you, man, you're busy. I'm busy. it's a crazy world, you know?
Yeah. When the schedules line up, you get to bang an episode out.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I like I was telling you before we kind of got on air here, it's like I was trying to get with you over the last 2 days, but I ended up breaking down over outside of Chicago, and I was over in Joliet, and I broke down out there and had to spend almost two full nights. I ended up getting back on the road last night at about 10 o'clock-ish to head back east towards home, man. And it's like, it puts a little damper on trying to get some of this stuff done. But, hey, it's all right, you know?
Yep.
Plus you're working on the builds because, what, I saw Gambler is a go.
Yeah, the New York one is being all commie and shut down. And the one in Maine gives no fucks. And honestly, I probably wouldn't have given it a second thought. But I ended up working in Maine last week, and it's like business as usual. There's a couple old ladies wearing masks in the stores, but they're already starting to do sit-down eating again. Like, life is normal up there.
Well,
and believe it or not, for the skeptical listeners, I didn't step over a single body in the street. So when I heard Maine being normal, the Gambler 500 is on. I went and bought a ticket, and it's like, great, now I got 3 weeks to slap the last of this hoopty together.
Well, it's like, dude, we're opened up. We've been opened up for, I think this is our second week now. We're at 50% on restaurants and stuff like that, but I mean, we're opened up. I mean, people are out golfing, people are out, you know, doing their thing, eating at restaurants and kind of living their lives. I tell you what, it's pretty depressed to see that Menards went like nationwide to enter their stores. You have to have a face mask.
Well, I mean, that's the way a lot of these places are.
That's crazy. Well, nowhere. That's the only place local to me that's like that.
No, I still live in the Socialist Republic of Massachusetts, and they are hardcore, like, straight up, like, crotch tugging about the whole mask thing. Like, you can't go into a single store around here without one on. And I'm not going to go out and buy one, so buy. An incredible stroke of luck. I work for a hazmat company, and one of the sites I work on, they provide me with masks. And by that, I mean they gave me one and said, if you need another one, ask. And I said, and I've been wearing the same one, but I wash it because I'm not an idiot. And I always dig that thing out of my pocket, like at the door, and I make a big fuss. So people see that I am pissed about putting it on. And it's not that I'm like, I said I refuse to wear one, but, you know, I got to eat, so.
Yeah.
I don't want to get thrown out of a supermarket because I don't have one on. But it's okay because as soon as you put on your approved mask and you walk inside, there's a guy wearing a milk jug on his head. Like, see, the rules are made up and the game doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I've only had to wear one once, and that's when I went to Menards and found that out. And I was just like, oh. I watched it. And I did the same exact thing. So I watched an Amish guy. Yes. Yes, folks, I have Amish that live among where I live.
That's where you came from. You came from Amish Kmart.
But, dude, I watched this Amish guy walk in, and he had a bandana because they all carry bandanas for snot rags. And so he walked in like a couple steps.
That's sanitary.
Yeah. Walks in a couple steps ahead of me, and the guy said, hey, you got to put a face mask on or you got to buy one. And the Amish guy pulls his bandana out of his pocket, holds it over his face, takes about five steps past that guy, stuffs it back in his pocket, and continued through the store. And I was like, oh, man, that's my kind of guy right there.
Yep.
Because he don't give a shit. And I'm talking, he was probably in his 50s.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the only people I see strictly adhering to this crap are scared old ladies. And by that, I mean some of the old men. Yeah, you can definitely tell, because one of the best places to stop for me on my way home from work is a TA truck stop, because they know if they try to enforce a mask policy there with truckers coming in and out of state, they're going to lose, because these guys look mean. I stand in line for the restroom, and it's like, you're going to hurt me if I cut you, aren't you? Yeah, you are. I'm not fucking around with that. So there's this hilarious policy there of, like, wear one if you want one, and it's like, it's amazing. There's nobody here who's, like, complaining that, you know, this place got them sick. And all the cashiers wear them, and they're, like, TA employee-provided whatever, you know, they're all wearing the same, like, dark, it looks like neoprene, it looks incredibly hot, and every time I come in there, they're pulled down on their chins.
Oh, like, yeah.
Okay, so let me guess, it's a pain in the butt to wear, and because you're wearing it to make people feel better, that's good, but if you keep pulling it down with your hand, which you're using to scan my items, and you keep pulling it up and pulling it down, pulling it up and pulling it down, would you mind explaining to me what the efficacy of a fucking germ trap is all over your face? Because not just virus, but anything you have. Why do they say when you do CPR, you have to have now a mouth-to-mouth barrier? Because people are filthy. We constantly exchange microbiological cultures with each other. That's how we keep ourselves alive. If we didn't, if you lived in a Lysol bubble and you went outside, you'd die. You'd be like the aliens in War of the Worlds.
They don't even do that in CPR anymore. There's no mouth to mouth at all.
Yeah, they have all that the new age shit. I'm sorry, I was in the Boy Scouts. I learned how to save somebody's life with what I get on me.
Yeah, we get it. You sold cookies, man. We get it.
Talk all the shit you want. But do you remember going in half of the Humvees that I was in that I did all the tie downs for?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you could get the stuff. And then you go into the next Humvee that fucking, you know, Private Joe Snuffy tied shit down with 550 cord. And it's the fucking green monster. You need a fucking knife to get to the water cans. It's like, you can talk shit all day, but you'll learn some good shit. And honestly, my biggest takeaway from Boy Scouts, I learned how to play the fuck out of some manhunt.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Boy Scout, Eagle Scout, and Cav Scout.
Pretty much.
You just live the scout life.
So the job site I'm on is an aerospace company.
Oh,
they
really?
They make all the gyros for, specifically, one of the departments makes gyros for the TOW 2 Bravo.
Gyros or
Euros? I walked
in there
and I was like, I used your product once, ha 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 ha, you know?
Gyros or Euros? Like, you know, like...
No, not the the lamb meat Greek sandwich.
They're so amazing. Dude, tell me, are they not amazing?
They are amazing.
Oh, my God.
Especially when I didn't know what they were for the longest time, and finally I tried one. I was like, holy shit, this is better than sex. I could give sex up and just live on this.
Orgasm in the mouth.
Pretty much. You put enough of that sour cream in there. Oh, whatever, man. That is.
So good. But anyway.
I don't even ask.
Back to the gyro.
But anyway, so I walk around this building all day, and it's this giant building. I don't know how to even approximate the square footage of the building that isn't square. It's fucking massive. Let's just say in an 8-hour day, I can only cover a third of the building. And I am supposed to wander around with a spray bottle full of... I started with bleach, because bleach would technically kill the virus if it were present, right?
Yeah.
Breaks down the outer lipid sheath, which is protein and fat, and which contains the harmful RNA, which will give you a virus that leads to death from other things. The virus doesn't kill you. But anyway, I won't get into fucking microbiology. I walk around this building with a spray bottle and rags. I have a clean bucket and a dirty bucket. The dirty bucket is sealed. So when I'm done with my gloves, I'm done with my rag, and I change rooms, I change gloves, and I seal it in the other bucket. And the first week, I did a great job. I walked into every office. I said, hey, how's it going? I'm Pete. I'm going to be on the site for a while. Your boss put me on. I'm not an employee here. I'm just an outside contractor. But you'll see me cruising through once or twice, a week. Depending on how frequently I get around. And I boiled the system down to roughly every 3 days, I get the entire building done. That lasted for 4 weeks, and then I just burnt out because I am incredibly disillusioned with the virus bullshit. I don't think it's as big of a deal as they make it out to be. And honestly, the best way to beat this shit is natural immunity. So if I go around sterilizing everything, people just get weaker. Now they're making us wear masks. It's just, fuck, man, I don't care. So I put my scout skills to work. And now I have the best sham routine of any E4 in the world. Like, the E4 Mafia is going to be proud of me. I figured out a way to sleep in the truck 6 hours of the day and not change my work output in the building from their perspective. It's fucking great. I know everybody's schedule because I am observing. I know everybody's schedule in the building. I know when, you know, Jerry in engineering gets up to take a shit at 9:15 in the morning. I walk by him like I'm going to go to his office. I say, hey, what's going on? Oh, no, too much. He goes to the bathroom. I spray the bottle in his door a little bit. I go to the next office. He comes back. He smells. I can't use bleach anymore because people have allergies. So they make me use peroxide, which doesn't do anything to a virus. But that's okay. As long as it makes people feel safe. Doesn't matter if the masks work or don't. It makes people feel safe. So this is why I don't give a fuck anymore. So I walk around this building. I know everybody's schedule. I know exactly which conversation to have with people to get a chuckle out of them. So if the guy who hired me decides to start asking, hey, you guys seen Pete today? Oh, yeah, he came through. He gave me his usual routine. Yeah, he's doing a great job. Cool. I've been there for 2.5 months now. They haven't asked any questions. They're happy as shit. They want me back every week. So scout skills.
There you go. Wow, that's interesting. No, so there is, so we'll get away from the coronavirus. We've dipped into it enough.
Thank God.
No, so I was thinking about it today. I was just, I don't know, it was just some weird, awkward thing to think about, but I was just thinking about it today. So I was looking back, man, and I think I watched a video or heard something about tunnel rats in Vietnam. And I wanted to get your thoughts because, okay, I'm a larger man. You're kind of not, you're not small, but you're not large.
Go ahead and call me a little man.
You're a littler man stature.
I fit easily into most overhead storage bins.
Exactly. So, like, you would be that guy within.
No, that would be Hoffmeyer.
Yeah, that would have been him. But he wasn't with us.
Oh, he was first platoon.
Yeah. So, you know, platoon-wise...
Within our platoon, it would have been Joe.
Oh, man. Yeah, but he's a leader.
That's the leader, thing. But if you watch Platoon, that was directed by Oliver Stone, and both Dale Dye and Oliver Stone were Vietnam vets who acted as advisors for the movie, and the first guy to go down in that tunnel was Willem Dafoe. He was a team leader. So, it was more of a volunteer basis because it was an impromptu task. Not every platoon is like, you're going to be the tunnel rat because you don't know if you're going to find a tunnel. Some parts of Vietnam, you're not anywhere near where the tunnel complexes were. Mm-hmm. So you basically come up with it on the spot as you went out on your search and destroy missions and you came across these complexes. At first, they were just trying to destroy them with, you know, Comp B or whatever, or C4, whatever they had on hand. They tried flamethrowers, trying to go all World War II on them, but these were very elaborate tunnel systems. After a while, they figured out, okay, we do need to start sending people down in there because not only do we need to ensure that these tunnels are neutralized, we also want to explore where they go, how expansive they are, and possibly have the ability to pull back actionable intel from inside of these tunnel systems because they basically had underground bases, like forward operating bases, that were completely invisible to the major advantage we had in Vietnam, which would be air superiority. We could basically overfly any part of the country. And other than the dense jungle canopy, we could pretty much see any kind of movement and any kind of troop buildup. And things like truck parks and, you know, fueling depots and things like that would be targeted immediately, which is why the Ho Chi Minh Trail had to be moved further and further out over the Vietnamese border into Laos and Cambodia. I think I'm getting a little off track here, but the point is, Ju could have been a tunnel rat.
Yeah. But I was asking, what if you were put in that situation?
Oh, so think you may not that. Recall, but I'm incredibly claustrophobic. Like, incredibly claustrophobic. I really don't know how well I'd do trapped in a dark tunnel full of traps and rats and little Asian men trying to kill me. I think that's the stuff of my nightmares. But if I do get a 1911 out of it, I don't know. That's rough. Would I volunteer for that duty? No, absolutely not. I don't handle myself well in small spaces.
Yeah, me neither, really.
I'm smaller as a guy, but I'm not stocky. I mean, I'm not short and wiry. I am stocky. So, yes, physically, I fit in the space. Can I maneuver once I'm in there? Remember I got that big ass? I'd be fucking gouging the sides of the tunnel as I crawled along, and they'd be like, oh, he's been in here.
Oh, man. No, okay. Yeah. Well, that's funny. I mean, you are, like, the bald Captain America. You are the bald Chris Evans.
And you know, that started a few years ago with me on, I tried dating apps because of Long. I was complaining to him, like, every time I go home on leave, by the time I meet some girl in a bar, and she's like, oh, yeah, I'm free next week. Like, I'm going back to Fort Campbell. Fuck. So I got back to Campbell, and Long's like, dude, download a dating app, and 6 months before you go on leave, start talking to these dumb bitches in your hometown. And I was like, well, that's an eloquent way of putting it, but I see your point. And after a couple, you know, on and off years in the Army of that, people started saying, you look like Chris Evans. And I'm like, you sound like a bot. And then finally started saying, like, wait, why do you say that? And they started sending me photos from very specific angles. And I was like, ah, shit, I see that. I'm like, a fat, short, bald Chris Evans. Ladies, if you like dad bods and Captain America, give me a call.
I'm just saying, that's America's ass.
I don't know. His is a little small compared to mine. Not that I spend an excessive amount of time examining other people's asses, but I am observant.
Yes, I see what you're saying.
Hey, do you remember Fort Carson? We were, I believe it was the same night we picked the cactus needles out of each other's asses. They had a higher, it wasn't the briefing that we got as team leaders. It was that, like, section leader to platoon leader kind of briefing.
Yeah, okay.
Where you can kind of see where, like, a lot of detail comes down from brigade, and then by the time it gets to the company, not the company, the troop, and down to the platoon, by the time it gets to us, they're like, yeah, we're going to go here and do this. But there's all this other detail. I was listening in to Lieutenant Harnachek and Sergeant Plano talking about the lane, and I distinctly remember hearing, there's a BOLO list for vehicles, and I remember them mentioning a blue Ford SUV and a red Toyota truck. And they had the license plates for them, and I pulled out my notebook, I think while you were pulling cactus needles out of my ass, and I just wrote it down, like, you never know. Because, you know, these lanes always seem to have so much detail in the briefing, and then you get out there and you realize the entire lane consists of Sergeant AK standing in a ditch wearing a fan dress.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fort Carson was pretty elaborate, so I was like, I'm going to remember this shit. And we got out the next morning. It was like the first hour into our movement. We got up on this massive ridge above the tree line, and we were walking at two-thirds exposure behind the ridge, and they called a short halt, and I remember looking out and seeing, like, probably three-quarters of a mile away at the bottom of the mountain, there was a three-way intersection, and I saw a red Toyota truck. It was a fucking Tacoma quad cab, and I looked through my ACOG. I couldn't read the license plate, but it was like, dude, that's gotta be it. And I went over to Plano, and I was like, hey, Sergeant Plano, I think I see one of the BOLO vehicles. And he's like, what, seriously? How do you know about that? I was like, because I overheard you. And he's like, yeah, all right, fuck yeah, we'll call it in. And it came over TroopNet that there was a notional attack by Apaches on that vehicle. And at the end, when we sat in the AAR, they were like, hey, whoever called in the BOLO on that vehicle, that's something that nobody ever gets. Congratulations. You guys got that kill. That was a good spot. I don't know who did that. And I'm sitting there like, oh, God. Oh, somebody recognized me for my achievement. Good times.
You must have been so proud of yourself.
I was.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Carson was so, it seemed like it was so long ago, but the only thing I remember is my badass haircut.
God, you mean that?
The forefinger on top of the head cut?
Yeah, you kind of looked like, I hate to draw the comparison, but you kind of looked like Heinrich Himmler if you went to fucking reform school.
Jesus Christ. That's kind of jacked up, dude.
Amish Heinrich Himmler in reform school.
Jesus Christ.
That brought something else to mind. Do you remember the lane we did? It was a couple days later, when we had to look for the downed helicopter crew.
Oh, yeah, the Fallen Angel mission.
Yes, and we had to go up on this. We were like the last element in the movement, and we were walking up this long spiraling trail going through like maybe, 15-foot tall trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up on top of this. It was basically a mesa. Well, was it a mesa? I guess technically it's a... It was this big knuckle of fucking rock sticking out into like a gorge. And there was this massive firefight going on with Op 4. By the time we got up there, the other two platoons were in contact, and we kind of got shoved to the sides and back to fill in the perimeter.
Yeah.
That was the day the camera crew was with us. Remember that shit? There was a fucking video camera crew walking around filming everything.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so I set in my guys, and I thought we were doing pretty good. And I remember that OC, that Lieutenant Colonel who yelled at you, he was like, "You're running a section?" I was like, "Yes, sir." He's like, "You're only a specialist?" I was like, "Yes, sir. I just want you to know you're doing a shit hot job." "Okay, thank you, person I've never met before. That means so much." That same guy was cruising around, so it's like, dude, I gotta make sure I look good while I'm doing this shit. So I double checked everybody like 3 times, and then I went to go, you know, let Plano know, all right, my guys are set in, we got this in the shammo, we're good to go. Overlapping sectors are set. If there's anything else I need to know, we could be pushing out a perimeter, you know, whatever. And the camera crew's just cruising around filming everything. The firefight's kind of going on in the distance. You can't really see up for, so they don't really know what they're filming. So they're just kind of walking around filming everybody, and I thought nothing else of it. And then they ended up kicking the perimeter out like another 20 meters, and that's where we found that draw where that notional helicopter crash was. Yeah. We found the mannequins, and we called up our 9 line. And we got those mannequins back to safety, and we definitely saved their lives. And at the end, we had an AAR again, and the video camera crew took their SD card out, put it in the computer, and they were playing footage. And they were like, "You guys did a great job today. Your movement speed was great. We're going to have to gig you again because you guys walked in a file everywhere." And I said, "Where the fuck did you want us to walk in a wedge in the side of a mountain?" Pissing me off. But they got to the end, and they said, "Except," and we're all sitting there smiling at each other, like, you know, me, Harnishek, and Plano are all kind of like looking at each other like, "Yeah, man, nothing bad. This is great. We're doing good." And they get right to the end, and the video pops up, and they said, "We just want to point out whoever this was. We didn't check to see, but what the fuck is going on here?" And they pause, and it's Church. Laying on his back with his boots up in the air. He was trying to relace his boots and shake a rock out or something.
Yeah.
He's got his boots sticking straight up in the air with, like, Pringle Pone security next to him. And it's just like one of those, like, what the fuck, man? The one time he does something like that, they get it on camera.
And
they were like, "Whose guy is this?" And they just left this long silence. And Plano was like, "Don't say shit." I was like, "All right, we'll just wait." And they're like, "It may be hard to see because everybody's dressed the same, but this kind of shit cannot happen in a firefight. We're going to continue, though. There's more." And then they kept moving down the line, and there's Egan sitting back-to-back with Little Hernandez, and you can hear him saying, "Dude, this is so fucking gay. Wouldn't that be retarded if the camera crew?" And he just looks up at the camera and just goes, "Oh." And they just keep going past him. They were like, "And we know which group this guy's in. Trust me, we will be talking to his team later." I'm sitting like, "Fuck, come on, man." I remember my fucking ass off when we get out of there.
I remember then it was like the next day we were out running operations in the mountainside again, and then they were like they were cracking down on us a little bit harder, and then they killed fucking Churchoff from a back blast from a AT-4. You remember that?
And he's like, "I don't remember that, no."
Yeah, so they like it was like the very next day we were out. We ended up taking like a peek, and like we did a long halt there for like 2 or 3 hours or something like that. Maybe not that long, but we were there for a hot minute. And I just remember because I had gotten contact, like I had visual contact with the guy, and I watched him for like 15, 20 minutes, and finally got the okay to, you know, let the blank rounds fly. And because we finally saw a weapon and had PID, that's the day that I got a hat trick. The notional hat trick is I get the 3 KIA on that side of the mountain. And then a vehicle came across, and I don't even remember who was carrying the AT-4 at the time or the notional AT-4, but then they fired the notional AT-4 and then they killed Churchoff because he was like, he was behind them, but he was 15 feet. He was about 15, 20 feet behind them, right?
Yeah,
but elevation-wise, he was probably 20, 30 yards below him.
Oh, okay.
And they killed
him. Basically, he would have gotten some dust in his eyes.
Yeah, and they killed him off. They killed him off for that. I don't know if you remember that. It was like after that video, but yeah. Oh, man. No, that and then like that made me – it's like you remember the Cop Keating mission in Was that Jared? Yeah, Jared TC.
Oh, the FOB overrun?
Yeah, the whole FOB overrun.
Oh, dude, have I got a story about that one.
Did you, like, I thought I was the only one that survived in our platoon.
I didn't realize anybody survived. I thought we got, like, flash mob.
Oh, dude, well, we did, essentially. But it was me, first sergeant, and a couple mortarmen. I remember, like, I looked up at the OC, because the OC was standing by us. And I was, like, laying halfway under a Humvee and, like literally under the driver's door in the driver's seat with my rifle sticking out alongside the tire, you know, the front steering tire on the driver's side. And I was taking pop shots when they were inside the compound. And then I looked up at the OC and he's like, "Hey, dude, you're still alive. You need to figure some shit out here because your whole entire platoon's dead." And I was like, "Oh fuck!" Dude, I was like, "Oh no!" Oh,
man,
no.
I would have killed for that opportunity.
So
where I was for that whole thing.
You were sitting in a gun, weren't you?
No, they stuck me in a fucking main with the
oh the tower.
Tower.
Yeah, the tower.
Dude, we were like the first wave of guys. They gave us a PAS 13 to use in the tower.
Yeah,
but if you recall, we got a big crate of fancy thermal imaging equipment to basically field test.
Oh, yeah. I remember because we used it on an ECP during the box.
Yep. But I had it. I was supposed to use the magnifier on my M14, but they didn't have any 7.62 blanks I could use unless I wanted to, like, sit there and fucking rack the bolt and make it sound like I was shooting live rounds and draw a lot of attention to myself. Yeah. So I couldn't really use the M14 unless we were shooting a live lane. So I left it in the Connex. And I had my M4, and I found that you could take that thermal magnifier and you could put it in front of the ACOG.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked mint. So I had that, and I got a thermal monocular, too, that clipped right into the Rhino mount.
Yep.
And I ended up giving that to Priegel, I think, and he got put on the far side. And we were supposed to use the PAS 13. And they put us up on a tower, and it's like you turn the PAS 13 on, you know how it is. You put in 6 AA batteries, you turn it on, you got 4 bars, and by the time the thing's done setting up, it's down to 3, and you do a quick scan, and you shut it off.
Yeah.
You turn it on 10 minutes later, you're down to 2. It's like, Jesus Christ, man, you need like a box of batteries with you just to scan for a night. So it's like, this thing's fucking pointless. So they put me up in the tower with O'Hara, and there was a role player up there. He was a mechanic from Fort Hood.
Yeah, I remember that.
they were under, like, strict orders not to talk to us and tell us what was happening. They were supposed to, you know, play the role of, like, a non-English-speaking local national soldier. Okay. And they took me. I was with Scott and Douglas originally. They left Douglas on the berm, like, 20 meters out to the side.
Yeah.
They took Scott, and we put him right below the tower watching the ECP. And they had us go out and set up an admin entrance. Remember our plan was to block off the entrance to C-Wire?
Oh, yeah. We did 7 rolls. Like, I remember I strained that out.
A real-world casualty. You guys need to have an admin entrance. You're gonna have it halfway blocked with chem lights. You know, that's stupid shit. So we went out, we unblocked the road, and we put chem lights out. It's notionally blocked, but if an FLA had to come in,
yeah,
they could grab it and move it. All right, cool, whatever. And then as we're doing that, a truck pulls up, and a bunch of fucking slick sleeve dicks jump off with no Rhino mounts, no fucking base plates, nothing. They've got like 2 mags each, and they're all wearing like brand new issued flicks. And they're like, "Oh, we're from a finance unit. They sent us out here. We're supposed to link up with just like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? Like, oh, they sent us out for combat experience." Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. So we radioed up and they're like, yeah, just keep them with you.
Yeah.
Great. Fucking great. So we put these 3 finance dicks on the ground with Scott. They didn't have nods. They only had 2 magazines each. And basically, they were just going to lay there and just drink our water all day.
Exactly. Hey, Pete.
What's up?
We'll carry this conversation on after we come back from the sponsor segment. For the listeners out there, keep tuning in to Charlie Foxtrot Radio. We're going to be right back after the sponsor segment. If you haven't checked us out, we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, any major streaming platform. Big shout out to Anchor. They're our sponsor. And big shout out to America Made Co. They're our other sponsor. Thanks for checking us out. Keep on listening. We'll be right back after the sponsor segment.
I'm going to go grab a beer while I'm doing this.
Yeah, you might as well.
Got to practice up.
You might as well, dude, because I mean, I grabbed a beer. You might as well get yourself one.
You still drinking Budweiser?
No, I'm over on Bud Light right now. And it's like, I had Miller over the last couple days when I was stranded out there in Chicago. I was having Miller Light.
Miller Light's my go-to now. It's my lawn mowing beer. There you are.
But, no. No, so we were talking about, let's think about it. We were talking about JRTC when we got the finance guys coming in, and then whole entire FOP got overrun. Do you remember after that whole entire scenario when they were like, oh, okay, we're getting ready to, we're going to like re-cock this thing and we're going to do something or whatever. And then lightning struck and everybody's miles gear went off.
Yes, that was something they didn't tell us before we started strapping that dumb shit on.
I just remember like there was a big old lightning strike and it was loud and it set. And I think it was probably because of the vibration, wouldn't you think?
Vibration or maybe like static electricity in the air.
Yeah. And it set like the whole entire compound just lit up and they had to go through everybody with the God gun.
And it was right after we already had gotten reset because everybody pretty much died. So yep. all the wailing of the fucking miles gear going off finally gets silenced and the lightning hit. And it was like, oh, here we fucking go again. But so they put me up in the tower with O'Hara. Scott's down the bottom with the finance guys. And the role player comes up. And he's, like I said, a mechanic from Hood. He's got an M16. He's got one magazine. He's got one magazine pouch that looks empty, and he's wearing DCU and a patrol cap.
Yep.
And he's just leaning against the wall. And remember we had all these high-speed plans when they told us about this FOB? Like, you know, every unit that comes through here gets fucked up by Geronimo, and we're going to come up with a plan. And because we're scouts, like I said, we like to do that hood rat shit. We had a plan to do an OP.
Yeah.
We were going to go out there like no, nothing shines, nothing rattles, like fucking commando style and PT caps and face paint.
Yep.
And we're going to bring all the FLIR shit and our fucking training claymores. And we had it all planned out. We were ready to go. I had fucking face paint on and everything. I was taping fucking O'Hara's crap down. And they're like, no OP. They're not letting us out. We can't do it. We have to stay in the FOB. Oh, we wonder why every unit gets overrun. But yeah. Okay.
Well, that's the that's the design of it, though.
Yeah. They just want you to know what it's like, I guess.
Yeah, more or less. That is the pure design of that whole entire thing. Is like, and that's another thing. I'm pretty sure, like, at that point, the Geronimo unit that was there, like, they shut their miles gear off. Because I had a buddy through the guard that was part of that unit at one point in time. And he said, yeah, dude, when we used to do that, because there's, like, two different styles of JRTC. And I completely forget the two different styles that you can go through JRTC. But, like, there's two different ones. And, like, that thing, the cop Keating mission is like one is only in the one style. Well, he says, yeah, we shut our gear off. They literally shut all the miles gear off and
makes
just
sense
go
to me. But they pulled other shit, if you recall. So I'm up in the tower. The PAS 13, we just gave up on it, and I'm diligently scanning with my fancy FLIR magnifier on my M4. And do you remember Harnachek's bike kept hot biking?
Yeah.
He was running. At first, we had a plan for like 25% manning, and the rest of us stay inside and drink water. We're going to rotate watches. It was like 110 degrees. It was like crazy fucking hot.
Yeah.
And we were almost out of water as soon as we started. Right off the rip, it was 100% manning until the lane was done because Captain Worley was so obsessed with passing this lane with flying colors. That it was like 100% manning. Everyone's watching the perimeter the whole time. It's like, this is not realistic, but okay. So the first hour we're there, I'm laying on a berm with Douglas, scanning. And they were like, yeah, as soon as it gets dark, we're going to go on that OP. And it was like, nope, OP's scrubbed. Why don't you go up in the tower with O'Hara? Okay. So I go up in the tower. The role player comes up. And he just looks at me and goes, yeah, just so you guys know, Geronimo's probably not even on post right now. They're probably still in town having dinner and drinking. They'll be on later. About 4:30 every morning. is when they attack. Yeah. I've done this lane 8 times in the last 8 days, and it's always 4:30 in the morning. So just get ready for a long, boring night, and then they're going to kill you. And I was, you know, we're all cocky. We're like, not if they get us. He's like, no, they will, because their Miles gear is either not on or they're not even wearing it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He's like, yeah, they're just going to come right in the front gate, fuck everybody up. They might harass you a little bit throughout the day, but they're not. Their main attack's going to be 4:30 a.m. Just so you know. I'm not supposed to tell you that, but you're going to lose. I don't know what you're supposed to get out of this. I can't even shoot. They won't even give me ammo if I shoot this magazine. I'm just here for looks, and I'm fucking tired of it, and I want to go home. Okay, so, well, no one is around. What's going on, man? What's your name? So we're shooting the shit up in the tower, and the sun starts going down. And, oh, sorry, it goes from, like, dusk when I get up in the tower. It's, like, now it's pitch black. And it's fucking hot. And I don't know about you, but when I was in country, I didn't wear fucking eye pro because the shit fogged and it was annoying. Yeah. So here we are in Louisiana. I'm not wearing eye pro. We're supposed to because we're training, but I can't fucking see through fog. Don't know what to tell you. So fucking Reinecek comes up. He's like, hey, make sure you guys get your eye pro on. I know it sucks, but, you know, just slide it down your nose and look over it. Just, you know, look the part when the OCs come by, all right? All right, you got it, sir. And I hear him run to the next position, and his fucking mic sticks on. You hear him like, oh, it's fucking hot. Sir, hot mic, sir. God damn it. And I look at him, I see him punching his fucking kit, trying to get his mic to shut up. And you hear him run to the next group. He's like, hey, how you guys doing? Drinking water? Hey, put your eye pro on. I know it's fucking hot, but, you know, make it look good. Sir, you're still hot micing. God fucking damn it. You see him, like, fucking really messing with it now. So I'm sitting up there. I put my fucking eye pro on. I had that stupid ESS eye pro that I bought for myself thinking it would be cool.
Yeah.
And it fogged right up. And it's like, this is stupid. It's dark. I can hear people coming up at the fucking tower. Mm-hmm. So I get a plan. These were the ones that you could fold the arms in and pull the lenses out.
Yep. I had the same ones. I had the same ones.
So I put my frames on and I'm like, dude, I'm so fucking smart. And the OC comes up and he's this big, fat, chonky looking dude. He comes over and he's like, you guys are doing great. You see anything? I was like, nah, not yet. You know, we've been scanning all day. Just some horses. Okay. Wait a minute. Corporal Franklin. And he gets down on a knee right next to me. And looks at me and goes, are you not wearing lenses in your eye pro? And I played dumb private. And I, like, poked myself in the eye through the frame. Like, oh, no, I'm so stupid. I didn't know. He's like, stuff like that is the kind of stuff that we're here to make sure that you fix. Because you might have gone into combat without a magazine in your rifle. Like, really, dude? Are you fucking serious? I would have gone into combat not wearing eye pro so I could fucking see. But that's okay. So I played dumb and I put my lenses back in, waited till he left, and then I took my lenses back out. So we're getting bored. I'm scanning with this sweet, clear imager. I can see everything. I can read Made in China on the fucking back of the stop sign like a mile away.
I remember.
It's so fucking sharp.
I remember because me and you, when we were in the box, me and you ran the ECP. And we were, you like, me and you, you kind of let me use your rifle here and there. Or anybody that, well, no, it was anybody that manned the ECP got to use your rifle.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You got hoard out.
So, yeah. but, yeah, I just remember. So,
all day long, I'm calling up everything I see. And when it got dark, this thing got, like, really fucking intense. So I turned, like, the game down on it. And it was still like, holy shit, dude, I'm not chewing through battery and I can tell what's going on in every direction for a mile.
I remember I remember at one point in time you called contact on a horse.
Yeah, I was just getting to that. Because we were getting, it was getting towards 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm thinking maybe they're a little early. And I swear to God, I saw a dude bending over, like at the waist, unnaturally, like 300 or 400 meters away. And then I only saw, like, up the bottom half of a guy standing behind him. And it was like, oh, he must be behind, like, a tree branch or something. And I called it up, like, I see two individuals 300 meters from the main gate, due north of the entry control point, 400 meters, hard to tell. It looks like one man bent over, digging, and one man standing behind him. We'll continue to observe. And everyone's kind of, like, listening, because there's nothing else going on. So the whole troop's listening to me. And I'm like, oh, they're moving. They're moving from west to east. The guy's still digging. And then the horse moved, and it was a horse with a tree trunk segmenting in its body. So I was like, ECP to CP, it's just a horse, over. And I could hear the whole fucking fob losing it. I was so serious about this contact. And I can hear everybody fucking laughing. And I'm like, great, I did a great job. And Sergeant Harmon, after the whole thing's over, comes up to me. He's like, hey, great job on finding that fucking horse, frankly. So I'm on high fucking alert after the horse.
Yeah.
And I'm up there. O'Hara keeps trying to fuck with the FLIR. The PAS 13. I'm like, dude, don't even fuck with it, man. He's like, I can't see shit through my nods. They're all fogged up. I'm like, so is the PAS 13, and it's got dead batteries. And the role player's looking at his watch, and he's like, you guys got like 10 minutes before you get fucked up. I'm like, hey, thanks, man. Really appreciate the optimism. He's like, there's no fucking point shooting back, man. You're just going to lose. You're just going to burn ammo. Whatever. We'll fucking get him. So the attack commences. About 4:28.
Here's the thing about that whole entire attack, dude, is like at the ECP and at the berms that pretty much perpendicular the ECP on both sides, we had full-blown gun trucks with 50s and Mark 19s up there. And there was even one with a tow. And I remember, I'm pretty sure Church even got a tow off, like the actual like 9mm tow or whatever.
Well, did the Miles laser system.
Yeah, well, but they're loaded with a 9mm, so there's some type of back blast. And he even got that off. The 50s were rocking. The 240s were rocking. I mean, like, when I looked at it from just, like, from my viewpoint, because all I was doing was bouncing back and forth between the trucks. Literally, I was like Harmon's bitch boy, and, like, all I did was run back and forth between the trucks just the whole entire time. And then go to the berms and just check on people. And just, that's all I freaking did that whole entire time. And I remember like Harmon eventually, like he apologized to me. He was like, I know you didn't get any downtime or any sleep. Thanks for sticking in there and really hanging in there for this or whatever, but just keep doing what you're doing. And then after that whole entire thing, all the guns let loose. And I mean, like we would have literally just,
Did FPF from the get go.
Oh, dude,
it wasn't like engaging point targets. We just death blossomed.
Yes, and I mean legit. Like I'm pretty sure every gun truck expended just about every single round. And then
had to. They weren't dying.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And then I just remember when I survived. I think they eventually just revived T-Bay because he was a random section leader or team leader or something like that. They revived him, and then me and him ended up getting in a truck and start moving people to the CCP that was like 15 miles down the road or something. Like it was about 15 minutes down the road, so probably like 7 miles down the road. And then I was like 36 hours into this mission driving. I just about like I'd love to have T-Bay on because, dude, he threw that hand mic and hit me in the face so goddamn hard because I fell asleep and I started driving this Humvee straight into the woods and he just smashed me with a hand mic, just freaking drilled me with the hand mic. And he's like, dude, wake up. You're like we're the lead of the convoy. He's like, wake up. What are you doing? I was like, I don't even know, man. I can't, like, I think I'm starting to hallucinate, man. I'm like so out of it. And then
you're driving with nods on too, right?
What's that?
You're driving with nods on too, right?
We were blacked out.
The first thing to knock you out, looking through like a tunnel.
And like, dude, I just about fell asleep, and he hit me with that hand mic. I was awake for like the next 12 hours with no issue.
I mean, it's in the TM. That's an approved method.
It was so funny. And then on our way back, after we made it to the CCP. Dropped everybody off. They notionally airlifted everybody out, whatever. We turned around and came back. We got full-blown ambushed on our way back. And we just blew through it. I, like, 60 mile an hour, just in the middle of the night. And I was under nods, and it was just as fast as we could go. We took contact from both sides of the road, dude. And T-Bay was just like, you put this motherfucker to the floor, and you don't let up until we're past all this. And there we went, dude. And it was like 5 or 6 trucks. And we just got after it. I look over at T-Bay. He's got his rifle through that little slit in the window. And he's just all he's doing is just doing mag dumps. Full auto mag dumps. Just letting everything fly. And then we made it back. And he reported the car. We made it through. And he sent the contact report up. But, oh, it was hilarious.
So about 4:28, I looked at the FLIR and I see – clearly a Dodge Ram 1500. It's like an 06. I can't see the color, but I can see the driver's picking his nose, the passenger's smoking a cigarette, and there are like three guys sitting in the bed. So I call it up. Like, this is right after my horse victory. Like, no one's going to take me seriously. And I was like, CP, ECP, I have what looks like an enemy technical approaching the main gate. And in the background, I hear the role player like, y'all going to get fucked up. Like, dude, shut up. All right, I'm doing my job. He's like, you're going to get fucked up.
Didn't that role player almost get tossed out of a tower?
I don't remember that.
I thought I remembered you saying that they tried to use him as a platform for.
Well, they pissed him off. He and a Geronimo guy got into like an argument because I'll get to it. We're getting there.
Okay.
So I see the Ram 1500 pulling up, and as I'm busy calling up, like, I can see three guys in the bed with rifles, three guys in the cab with rifles. Remember there was a ditch, like the ECP driveway went out to a T intersection with the main road.
Yeah.
There was a ditch on the far side.
Yeah.
Geronimo must have low crawled through that shit for like a mile. They just came out of the ditch. They're like 20 guys. And as soon as I saw 20 heads pop up before I could even radio, like, holy shit, like, main gate is under attack. Like, we are done. We're done. There's fucking like 40 of them here now. They threw a smoke bomb, which, by the way, Miles lasers can't go through, which is pretty convenient. they threw a smoke bomb down in the middle of the ECP driveway, and the Ram 1500 turned around and started backing in. The guys in the bed jumped out, and they grabbed the chem lights of the admin entrance that they made us set up, and they just tossed the C-wire aside. And that Ram 1500 backed in with all the Geronimo guys, like, running in a half crouch in two columns behind it, like some kind of World War II Soviet armored attack. They're like, what the fuck is this? And we just start going to town. Fucking, I yell out of the tower because I didn't hear any shooting. I was like, Scott, shoot. He's like, I don't know, I have permission. Dude, fucking shoot. What are the Pogues doing? I'm like, I don't even have my rifle in my hand. I'm yelling out of the tower at them in the middle of this notional firefight. You fucking Pogues better start shooting. Eh, what? Just fucking shoot. It doesn't matter. You don't have miles. Just make noise. I go back and I grab my rifle and I start trying to engage guys. And by the time I'm like up on the edge of the tower and properly engaging targets, they're already over the berm. They basically Miles bayoneted fucking Scott in the throat, ran over him. And it was like, holy shit, like, you can hear him moving around the base of the tower.
Yeah.
And the role player is just sitting down. His M16 isn't even in his hands. He doesn't give a fuck because he knows he's about to get drilled in the face with a laser the second I come up the stairs. He's sitting against the wall, and O'Hara and I are like, oh fuck, dude, go quiet. We lay on the floor, and there was kind of like a table in there to put like a spotting scope on or a 240 tripod.
Yeah.
We're underneath that table laying on the floor, and we're like intersecting our points of aim out the door with our fucking PEC-15 lasers off so they can't see we're up there, and we're waiting to fucking tag the first guy up in that tower. And before we can even like start to think like we're going to drop that first guy, some Geronimo dude comes running up the tower stairs. He was built like fucking, he must have been like Fair Sergeant Wilson. He was fucking huge. And he came up, and it was like, we started popping rounds, and he came right around the corner. He had a fucking 240 shoulder firing it with no bipod. It was all stripped down. And he just fucking blasted us. And I remember my fucking, my thermal magnifier did not like the muzzle blast out of that 240 VFA. And that screen went purple, black, green, brown off. And started whining, and my fucking my nods kicked off. My fucking Miles was screaming. Fucking O'Hara's screaming, "What the fuck, dude? I got you!" And he's like, "Huh? You guys fucking suck." Turns around, he's walking down, and as he's walking out of the tower, guys in our unit in the compound are now engaging the tower. So it's like, great, now my body's gonna get riddled with notional bullets, and I won't be identifiable to my mom. Awesome. And he lays down on the floor, and he's trying to use the fucking dead role player as, like, not cover, but kind of like a sandbag for his non-bipoded fucking, you know, 240. And he doesn't. This role player doesn't like fucking hot brass laying it all over him and getting shoved around. He's like, dude, I fucking had it with you guys. You do this shit every fucking time. Like, they're going at it. And I just remember him getting in a big scuffle, and I'm just trying to lay there like, I'm dead, so I'm not going to do anything. So I'm trying to contribute to this training event to the best of my ability by being an inanimate object right now. And I also don't want to get fucking thrown out of the tower by this giant Geronimo Wilson dude. So finally, they leave, and all I can, the radio's still on, so I get the play-by-play of everything. I can hear all the trucks going down one by one. I can hear shit. And finally, once the combat moves away from us, O'Hara and I low crawled over to the opening and we're just watching the shit through our nods. Like, holy crap, dude. This is a shit show. It's seriously fucking hilarious watching all you guys like grouping up around like the last couple trucks and hiding between the buildings and the fob trying to fight these guys.
Well, I went, like, I was the only one left in our platoon that I knew of that was still alive. And I went to the CP, and then the mortars are literally never manned a gun once. They were hiding in a Connex. And wow. Then I like ran past them. I was like, what in the, like, what the hell are you guys doing? And they're like, hey, get out of here. And like, I ran over to the first sergeant and like, I found first sergeant, was it Carrie? I think it was Carrie at the time. Yeah. Cause Carrie yep. just took over. And I found First Sergeant Carrie and he's like, all right, this is what we're going to do. We got a 5-man team and we just started cruising around the rest of the compound.
I heard about that.
Yeah. Oh man. And then we got the CP set up and we started manning trucks. They brought T-Bay back. Either they brought him back or T-Bay was still alive. I don't remember.
We heard Captain Worley was in the CP with his Zine Mill out crying. Listening to all the OPs, not all the OPs, but like all the towers go down and all the trucks go down. And I guess he had like a nervous breakdown and First Sergeant Carey had to like relieve him of his mic. Be like, sir, you just need to sit down. You did the best you could. There was no way you were going to win this thing. All right, boys, let's go. Let's go fuck them up and let like a fire team out.
Yep. And I remember that. I do remember that. I don't remember seeing Captain Worley, but I remember when we like, and like, that was one of the things is we had captured throughout the whole JRTC event, we had captured the most HVTs that any unit prior to us had.
Yep.
And we had the most confirmed kills with the sniper team and all sorts of other stuff. And then I just remember we got back and then all of a sudden Captain Worley was gone.
Ah.
You remember that?
Yeah, that was right around the time that Echo Troop started up, though.
But
Captain Asscrack came in, and I think Worley, wait, did he go over with the SAT teams?
I think he did, but see, what happened, what I had heard what happened is he got released after JRTC, supposedly he did such a poor job on the command side that he got relieved of his duties, and then he got sent to an S shop, and then he ended up deploying again through the S shop.
God damn it. The fucking S shop's got to go and I didn't. Do you remember the lane where we were shit hot? Remember they sent like me, Moores, Douglas, and Robbie White to like an SSE class for a few days?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a whole story unto itself, but we were.
Oh,
we were,
I just sat in a truck. That was the day before I became a dismount.
Okay.
Because I remember you making I vaguely remember that whole entire operation. It was so friggin' hot out, and I sat in the truck the whole entire time in kit. And I remember you making fun of me because I climbed out of the truck, had a little small sweat spot in my back.
Yep. I was like, oh shit, oh, you cut today. And I was wearing dark gray urban camo. My ECUs were so wet.
I was so pissed. But then after that. Immediately after that, because I went to Moore's and I said, dude, like, I should not. I went to my section leader and I was like, man, I feel like I could be a lot more than just a driver. Immediately changed. He's like,
Douglas, right? Because Douglas was sucking dick for beer money.
Yep. He's like, immediately, he was like, you're right. We're switching you over. And then me and you did that. We went out and did that, like, LP. Remember that? That we went out and set that Claymore up for the FPL and then we were the advanced party.
Yep.
For contact and whatnot. And then
we got to do all the high-speed shit. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, and then do you remember getting Tina's 249 at the time, and then it was a rust bucket?
That escapes me.
Yeah, so...
Wait, did you have it or did I have it?
I had it because I had it with you. So I had my M4, that 249, because Tina was manning the gun. Me and you went out there to do that forward party, that forward LP that we were doing.
Yep.
And then I had that 249, and you were looking at it over it with me, and we were like, oh my God, I don't think this thing can. Yeah. I was like, dude, I don't even think this thing can fire. It is completely, completely rusted.
I think we had that torn apart on a fucking tarp in the tent for like 2 hours, and you and me just tag teamed to swapping parts back and forth.
Yep.
Just cleaning it, pass it, clean it, pass it, just to make it usable. That's coming back now.
Yeah, the little things, man. Because
Tina got hurt. It must have sat in the arms room. And then they were like, oh, we need that at JRTC. And it sat in a Connex for the first 3 weeks there. And I bet you the bitch wasn't oiled. Yep. And it just flash rusted up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that day that I made fun of you for sitting in the truck all day, we went into this village. It was basically like the dismounted version of Black Hawk Down. We had to go in, we had to secure a perimeter, and we had to go upstairs, and we had to check out this building that was supposedly a bomb maker's fucking, you know, residence or a place of business or whatever. And I guess the way the lane was set up, it wasn't supposed to be done at like perfect SSE. They didn't know that, like, me and Moores and a couple other guys were, like, fresh out of that class.
Yeah.
And it was all still, like, fresh in our heads. Or, like, that some units don't send people to that shit at all. You just kind of, you just wing it. We had the SSE kits on us. We got up there. We got into a firefight in the hall. We dropped the dude in the hallway. Fucking Moores dropped off to fucking search him and kick his weapon away. I held security on the hallway. Moores said, we're good. We push into the room. We cleared that shit out. And then we radioed outside that we are good to go. And they were like, lock the perimeter down, start doing SSE. And we were shit hot. We pulled the bags out.
Yep.
We photographed everything CSI style. We put the gloves on. Then we started going through everything. Morris is writing down serial numbers. I'm pulling. They had an Airsoft M9 up there. It was a fucking crossbin. But you know what they have? Serial numbers. I pull it up and I'm reading the serial number off of it. The OC is like, dude, I've never seen anybody in like 6 years of this fucking shit. Read the serial number off of the prop gun. And I was like, that's what you do with a real gun. This is a real gun. This is a real lane. We got this shit. But we had it bagged and tagged. We had boxes of fucking shit ready to go. All the fucking notional intel, the maps, the pictures that we were supposed to grab. We had it all set up with photographs of where everything was. And we even did a notional hide on the body in the hallway. We collapsed back outside. And that's where First Platoon was pulling. They were doing the perimeter outside.
Yep.
They got into fucking contact. You remember that fucking Humvee was trying to evac two dudes on the hood who got killed?
Yeah.
And they're backing up, and I'm looking through the window, and I see the fucking up four dudes run out of the tree line and climb up on the hood of the reversing Humvee, shoot the gunner, and yell, duck down, you're dead, you're slumped. And they basically went headfirst in the turret with a 9mm and fucking killed the driver. Which, it's like, is this the army right now?
It was
Expendables.
That was Hoffmeyer. I'm almost positive that was Hoffmeyer.
Because First Platoon, it must have been.
Yeah.
It was their one truck. It was the funniest shit. It was like, we couldn't get our weapons up in time to engage yet. Not that they were wearing fucking miles gear. But just watching a Humvee reversing away from a dude sprinting after him with a 9mm, going full fucking parkour up on the hood, shooting the gunner and going headfirst in the turret to kill the driver of an up-armored. Like, holy fucking shit, dude. That was a hell of a day.
I tell you, we had some good times during JRTC. We did.
Oh, do you remember the day Lewis was up on the turret and we had to go out on that early morning patrol? It was like just our Humvee. We had to go set up a blocking position somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And you drove through that spider web and we thought he's being a bitch and he drops down inside the turret screaming and flailing and he's covered in the thickest spider webs I've ever seen with these massive fucking spiders crawling around in it.
Yeah.
And he hated spiders. He was freaking the fuck out. I was laughing till I turned around and shined my fucking flashlight on him. And I was like, holy shit, stop the truck. Get him out. And we had to fucking clean them off, and we shine our lights up in the trees, dude, and it was just like, it looked like cotton candy.
Yeah.
It was fucking nasty.
Oh, man. Well, Pete, man, it's been a blessing catching up with you, man. It really has, dude.
Likewise.
I appreciate you coming back on the show, and for the listeners out there, thanks for tuning in to Charlie Foxtrot Radio. We really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't checked us out, we have a Facebook page. That's also one of our sponsors. It's America Made Co. That's MERICAMADECO. Check us out on Facebook. We got a lot of our merchandising on there. My wonderful wife has got tons of stuff. We do custom shirts. We do business shirts. We've done a couple businesses, and we've designed their shirts. And we do Charlie Foxtrot Radio shirts. We do all that stuff. And then big shout out to Anchor for being our other sponsor. Really appreciate you guys and what you're doing for us. And thanks to all the listeners out there for being part of this. And don't forget, everything that this podcast makes is going to go back into a family in need during a time in need. But other than that, we appreciate you all for listening, and we're going to sign off.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Peace out.